From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for January 25th, 2019. Roller Derby is back. The Brew City Bruisers have their first match of the season this Sunday at 4 at the Panther Arena. And for an extra $5, you can bring your dog. Thursday night, Bob Marley's band, The Wailers, are at the Pabst Theater. And here's just a little something to take the chill off. Only 61 days until the Brewers' home opener. Oh, I'd love to be an Oscar Mayer wiener. Well, now you can be. Oscar Mayer is looking for drivers for the iconic Wienermobile. It's a one-year gig with 100% travel, benefits, and best of all, an Oscar Mayer wardrobe. Oh, goody. Well, you need to be outgoing, creative, friendly, enthusiastic, and you must be able to sing. My baloney has a first name. It's O-S-C-A-R. Everybody. Okay. Okay, one American dream is to own a home in a great suburb with great schools. They usually have names like Happy Apple Orchard, El Toro Estates, Alligator Farms, etc. But now, how about this one? A 150-year-old subdivision in Denver with million-dollar homes is called Swastika Acres. You got to believe that can't be good for property values. And the parades must be a little unnerving, too. In the studio today, we have Kyle Tedding, Dave Sandstrom, Tom Pappenfuss, Joel Dreesang. And wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Max. Max, I got to tell you, all the years you and I spent at County Stadium when they built Miller Park and it opened in the spring of 2001, George Bush threw out the first pitch. Me and you were there.
Yeah.
It took me years to get used to saying Miller Park. Yeah. And now I'm up against that same obstacle. I've been trying to figure out, are we all going to say AmFam Stadium, or are we just going to abbreviate it? How's this going to play out? And I'm just so worried that, you know, it took me forever to get used to Miller Park. I kept calling it County Stadium because that's what it had been for half of my adult life.
I call the Bradley Center the Milwaukee Arena for years, so I'm going to be in
okay,
in
so
big
you
trouble.
And I are in the same boat here. But,
you can sign the petition.
Yeah, 50,000, I saw those. Pretty wild. Well, for the week overall, mixed results. NASDAQ up just 0.1%. Adding 8 points to close at 71.65. The broader markets slipped 0.2%, shedding 7 points to close the S&P stock composite 500 at 26.64. The Dow Jones Industrial Average eked out a 23-point gain this week, surprising because we lost 300 points on Tuesday. To close at the bell this afternoon in New York, with the Dow finishing the week at 24,729 year-to-date, NASDAQ up 8%, S&P up 6.4%. And the Dow is up 6.1% for the year. Pretty good start to 2019. You know, Kyle, stocks lost ground earlier in the week as China's economy continues to slow. As you know, it's the slowest pace since 1990. World's second largest economy worsened in recent months, weakening in manufacturing, consumer spending, real estate, and, of course, the continued trade tensions. Getting a lot of people's attention nowadays.
It absolutely is. You know, I think a big part of the issue with China that, you know, we continue to point to is this transition away from a government spending-based economy, from this idea that the government's going to build these roads and highways into eternity, and understanding now that that can't continue to drive growth, that that wouldn't be a good way to continue to drive growth in China. And so you have now a transition to this consumption-based economy that, you know, by all accounts, has been a little bit rocky, and certainly we've got a long way to go. And yet, you know, I think the story in China is a longer-term story. You look at kind of the way that we would look at investing in China specifically. It's not money you need tomorrow, certainly. It's not even money you're going to need in the next 3 to 5 years, probably, because, again, the story to be told in China is a story that should be measured over much longer time periods. So, you know, always concerning as far as kind of the global economy is concerned. It's such a big player. When you see those kinds of numbers come out, when you see maybe some uncertainty about the direction. But, you know, I think you take a step back and look at the kind of the broader view of China, and there's still an incredible amount of opportunity there. And so, I mean, always trying to weigh those two things.
Kyle, 3 years ago this month, stocks got hammered because of the abrupt slowdown in China. only to see that later in the spring, the Chinese government, the leadership, stimulated the economy, threw a lot of money at the problem, and they turned the corner. The point simply is that every single year, it seems, I start the year with all these warnings about the potential for a significant slowdown, and then I wonder at some point in time, when does the wolf show up on my doorstep? You know, the International Monetary Fund downgraded its global growth forecast in part because of the slowdown in China. They were calling for 3.9% global GDP growth this year. Now they're down to 3.5%. Moreover, the International Monetary Fund is saying that global expansion has weakened. Well, yeah, it has. So hopefully we'll get past that. Tom, let me bring you into the program here. What's your take on current events?
Well, I think what I'm having a lot of discussion of now, right now with my clients, is something that we've talked a lot about in the past, but, you know, for a lot of my clients that are retirees and income taking, you know, we're taking a look at their investments and trying to decide, you know, in a more tactical approach to where we're drawing for their income needs. And with the sell-off in equities and, you know, lo and behold, you look at your portfolio and bonds and cash-like instruments have held up much better. You know, we're using the opportunity to, you know, as we've talked about for many, many years, and why we have a balanced approach is to look at taking from bonds and some of the investments that have held up much better that could have a much better or more prolonged a positive impact on your portfolio.
And Tom, as you're well aware, that simple decision can increase how much you can take out of a portfolio each year. If you're smart enough to just stop taking money out of stocks when they're under duress, lean into the asset class that's recently done fairly well, you can support higher withdrawal rates. Mm-hmm. You know, I find that we're in a curious stage right now with the Federal Reserve. You know, it was only back in October that Jay Powell, the head of the Fed, said that we were way below the neutral rate for overnight funds. And now, you know, 5 months later, 4 months later, everybody's acting like the Fed's almost done for the year, done for this cycle. Futures market in Chicago think there's a 40% chance that the Fed could start lowering rates by the end of the year. And why I'm bringing this up in your context is that I find myself looking at bond portfolios with this itch, if you will, of I want to start extending durations on the bonds to take advantage of the fact that interest rates may be peaking out here this spring. You know, I read in the paper this morning that the Federal Reserve is talking about backing off of selling bonds out of their inventory. Didn't see that coming. Just further evidence that, you know, the Fed might be reacting to some of this weaker economic news with this idea that, you know, maybe all these increases since December of 15 are now a thing of the past. And that's very, very different than what we saw in the fourth quarter of last year, right? Roll back the clock. The 10-year Treasury was at 3.25. Now it's at 2.75, folks. That's a huge drop in a short period of time in the 10-year. As I said, Jay Powell is quoted as saying that we're way below the natural rate. Now, they don't think that's the case. Institute for Supply Management, service sector activity jumped to its highest level ever recorded last fall. Granted, they don't have been keeping records for 10 years, but still, that got everybody's attention. October payroll gains were higher than expected, and nobody thinks any of that stuff is an issue 4 months later. It's just remarkable, the turnaround. You know, the 10-year, just that tells you everything. Going from 3.25 down to 2.75 in just a handful of months. So it's remarkable how the attitude, if you will, the environment shifts on the street in a fairly short period of time, that the selling clearly got overdone in the fall, and now we're just off to a wonderful start for the year.
Well, I saw that same article today on the Fed backing off on maybe on their reduction plans for that, for their balance sheet, and I agree with you. I think that's a real significant aspect of why we've seen this nice recovery here. You look at sectors like home builders and what their stocks have done this year. I think it's all in response to the fact that mortgage rates have come back a little bit since since the fourth quarter of last year and ease some of that concern about where rates are headed. It's provided some relief, I think, for equities markets.
Well, and keep in mind that the Fed for so long had maintained this balance sheet, $4.5 trillion in assets, and you had so many people knocking down the door screaming that inflation was sure to follow. That when you've got that much money sitting on the Fed's balance sheet that's made its way into banks' balance sheets then, and all this lending is going to lead to this inflation that just hasn't happened because the banks have used it to capitalize. The Fed has been very smart about the way they manage those assets. And so, you know, now with inflation less of an issue, maybe because the employment picture is not as big of an issue, maybe because of some of the other pieces of, you know, slowdown in China, I think more reason that the Fed can hold out that, yeah, maybe the new normal for what the balance sheet looks like isn't zero or, you know, a little bit of money. It's going to be a far bigger number than what it was in the past. And that doesn't mean they lose control over rates. It doesn't mean they lose control over inflation. It simply means that that's where they are now.
Joel, let's bring you into the program. Existing home sales lower than expected. Pace continues to slow.
Yeah, Bob, we've been noticing that for a while now, that the housing industry isn't quite doing as well as it had been. It, you know, grew out of the recession, and it started to actually expand for a while, and probably peaked a year and a half ago. And so they're still selling homes, but it's not the pace that it used to be. 2018 ended up being the lowest home sales for existing home sales, which is the biggest part of the market, since 2016. And we're still waiting on some of the numbers that the federal government has that they collect and report regularly on things like building permits and new home sales. That'll help paint the picture more about housing, and because of the government shutdown and now prospects for it to come back, maybe we'll start seeing more of those numbers as well.
Well, I hope that the first thing they do is look at the economic statistics and publish them right away so we know which way we're driving.
That's where I'm sort of seeing the rubber meet the road here. So I don't know how soon that is. You know, next week we have, we're supposed to have report on report on fourth quarter GDP. So that's like the biggest look at how the economy is doing. We're also getting our jobs report. Now, the Labor Department was funded in advance, so we should still be getting that number. But things like consumer spending, construction spending, some of those numbers are expected out next week, too. And as I say, I'm not sure how quickly they can assemble the numbers and put out the reports.
Index of leading economic indicators came out down.
Yeah, it was down a little. And there, too, you talked about the IMF downgrading the forecast globally and the economic leading indicators from the conference board. That now is to a point where that business group is saying that GDP for the U.S. for all of 2019 might be closer to 2%. So the last number we had from the Commerce Department was 3.4% pace for the third quarter of 2018. And second quarter, we were up to 4.2%. So, going back to 2%, it's still advancing, but it's certainly slowing down.
Well, most of the pros think that we probably averaged 3% for last year for GDP growth, 2% for this year, but then you got to subtract some of the negative effects of the government shutdown. So we'll probably be a little bit south of 2%. Still a positive number, though. Cal, you and I were talking earlier today about Jack Bogle's death, the guy that made indexing very popular. And we spent some time, you and I, looking at the downside protection of many actively managed funds and how the indexing craze perhaps has missed that. I was talking to a client yesterday morning that owns an index fund, compared it to 8 of his actively managed stock funds that lost far less than the index stock fund did last year. Bogle, of course, is famous for saying, I think somewhat incorrectly, he would always say that the average fund can't outperform the index. And I don't know why anybody would just search out for the average fund when we all know that there are plenty of funds that on a fairly consistent basis do better than average. But it's interesting to focus not just on upside or not just on total return, but also downside protection, because I find it remarkable that a lot of actively managed funds held up way better than the indices did last year because they're able to get out of harm's way as best they can.
Yeah, you know, Bob, I think it's one thing to make a true statement that the average fund doesn't beat the index. It's another to then extrapolate what you should do with your investments from that statement. And, you know, your point about, yeah, we don't look for average. We look for those funds that can consistently beat or can do something different than what the index is doing. It's not just about return. It's about the risk that you take to get to that return. And I think if you can take a little bit less risk and get similar return, the investor experience is so much better. You don't have to put up with, you know, as you said, the fourth quarter, the downside that we saw in that fourth quarter was substantial. If you can participate in that with maybe 70%, but still participate in most of the upside, you know, you're looking at a fund that, yeah, maybe the returns aren't exactly in line with the index. Maybe they're even a little bit behind, but at the same time, you're not behaving with the kind of volatility. And so as an investor, we talk about this idea of building regret-proof portfolios that includes investments that you can live with. You know, if you're going to build a portfolio that you can stick with, it means that the underlying investments themselves have to be ones that you can stay with through thick and thin. And so I think more important than ever to look at not just, yeah, what's my total return number over the last 1 year, 3 or 5 years? Okay, yeah, maybe the index looks a little better than some of your investments, but what kind of risk did they take to get there? What did it look like when things were really bad, not just when things are really good?
And Kyle, to think about the protection that that gives an investor just from their emotional mistakes that they make in a fourth quarter like we just experienced, and to have a few positions in the portfolio that are holding up during times of that kind of duress really gives clients, I think, that the fortitude to just hold tight and not make a bad decision and sell into that kind of pressure.
I think one of the interesting parts about John Bogle, it's actually one of the first books I ever read, was Common Sense on Mutual Funds in college. And but his lasting impact on driving down expenses, you know, really he's a pioneer in the industry. And I think Morningstar has conducted research that still actively managed funds, average annual expense ratios are still coming down to this day, feeling more greater pressure, you know, by the influence of people, you know, attempting to, you know, having that be a big important part of how they invest and bring down.
Yeah, certainly, Tom, the impact, I think the biggest impact of Vanguard has been that managers now, active managers, need to justify their fees, that you actually have to earn what it is you're making. And so, you know, I think in that regard, investors are better off. And again, I think the one thing to remember is it's not strictly about performance. It's about what you do to get there.
Well, needless to say, rest in peace, Jack Bogle. Well, folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. Thanks for joining the show. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.